is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, what does the leak of 11.5 million files from the Panamanian law firm Mossack Fonseca tell us about tax havens and those who use them? Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. The leaker, whose identity has not been revealed, provided the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, or ICIJ, with a trove of files covering nearly 40 years. The Panama Papers, as they have been dubbed, unveil the offshore holdings of approximately 140 politicians and officials, including 12 current and former presidents, monarchs, and prime ministers. They show how money was moved around and hidden by at least 33 people and companies blacklisted by the United States for allegedly doing business with rogue states, terrorists, or drug barons. The huge leak of data has revealed details of how the world's wealthiest people hide their fortunes. Among those directly implicated were the Prime Minister of Iceland, the brother-in-law of Chinese President Xi Jinping, King Salman of Saudi Arabia, a cousin of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, and a childhood friend of Vladimir Putin. Putting money in offshore accounts is not necessarily illegal and can be used to establish legal tax shelters or ease international business deals. But the report said the documents show banks, law firms, and other offshore players often failed to follow legal requirements to make sure their clients were not involved in criminal enterprises, tax dodging, or political corruption. The full implications from the Panama Papers are not yet clear, and more stories about them are expected in the coming days. But already, governments across the world are pledging investigations or denouncing the report as unfounded attacks. Well, with us to discuss the significance and fallout from the Panama Papers are Will Fitzgibbon. He's a reporter for the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, and they led the probe of leaked documents. And Porter McConnell. She's director of the Financial Transparency Coalition, and that's a network that works to crack down on illicit financial flows. And both panelists join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Well, Will Fitzgibbon, with the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, I'd like to begin with you to talk about the Panama Papers, the 11.5 million files that we discussed in the introduction. What, in your view, is the significance of the findings so far, all these opaque offshore companies, trusts, and foundation used by this Panamanian law firm's clients? What is your reaction?
I think what surprised me ever since I started working on Panama Papers nearly 1 year ago now was how universal this offshore world was, how businessmen and women, politicians from countries as small as Rwanda to as large as Russia were using offshore structures, and just also how common it was. What continues to surprise me, and I think what is important in Panama Papers, is really the sense you get that there is a parallel economic universe that exists for those people who have the wealth or the political power to basically decide what tax rules they play by.
Well, Porter McConnell, what is your reaction? I mean, Will talks about being very common, this so-called parallel economic universe that seems to exist and available for people in countries as small as Rwanda to others as large as Russia.
Will's absolutely right. What was striking to us is the Panama Papers leaks are just one firm, and heads of states are already being implicated. One of the things that we have found is that, for instance, in Delaware, there are over 300 Mossack Fonsecas. So just imagine if all of that information were available to the public.
The state of Delaware here in the United States.
That's right. Certainly Panama is on the list, but sadly there are many other jurisdictions that have similar lack of disclosure around the owners behind companies.
Well, back to you, Will Fitzgibbon, to talk more about some of your findings in addition to this commonality that you mentioned. Do the Panama Papers show evidence of crimes, would you say?
I think the Panama Papers are quite clear in the number of criminals, fraudsters, convicted or alleged, who used shell companies. When we're talking about criminality, often criminal activity is something that is revealed many years later after shell companies have been formed. There are, for example, notable cases such as the former governor of Delta State in Nigeria, James Ibori, who's been convicted in court, sent to jail, and he appears in these files with a string of offshore companies that were allegedly eventually used to buy a private jet, for example. I think in many other cases, Panama Papers will be an ongoing useful resource so that investigators can continue to find out who is behind what offshore company for future criminal investigations.
Well, turning back to you, Porter McConnell, from the perspective of your organization, you mentioned, for example, the state of Delaware here in the United States. Certainly there are legal reasons and certainly above board reasons for the formation of shell companies. Talk about the difference between the legitimate use of these companies and then the illegal use.
So shell companies are not necessarily all anonymous. There are some shell companies that do disclose the owners behind them. The reason that we find them suspicious is because there's this total lack of disclosure generally for most of the companies involved. Most jurisdictions don't require you to say who's really behind a company, which makes it the perfect tool, a strong temptation to move stolen money, to evade taxes, to run a criminal operation anonymously. Private citizens who apply for a government ID or a driver's license often, nearly always, provide more information than what's required to set up a multi-million dollar enterprise. For us, I think that's a sign that that's no longer just a personal matter or a question of some numbers being moved around by accountants. Crime, inequality, violence, these are all the inevitable result of this kind of extreme financial secrecy that's available to the rich and the powerful.
Back to you, Will Fitzgibbon. In terms of these types of companies being set up, do you see any movement toward changing the ability of people to create these types of companies? Will there be a move afoot for greater disclosure? What are your thoughts?
I think over the past few years, according to what people much smarter than I have said, there have been some positive reforms. And even in Panama Papers, you see that in emails that clients send to Mossack Fonseca. You see growing concerns over the past 5 years that they may not be able to hide money from the tax man anymore, or that they acknowledge individual clients that their name all of a sudden will need to start appearing on documents. So clearly some domestic and international reforms are having impact. I know, however, and Porter will speak to this more eloquently than I, that there are still lots of concerns that the flurry we're seeing around Panama Papers now might just remain at the rhetorical level.
Well, let me put that question to you, Porter McConnell. Do you think that the flurry of concerns will be mostly rhetoric, or do you see major changes that will result?
I think it's up to us. I think people around the world are very frustrated. They're not willing to pay the price anymore. And as they learn about this evolving story, it's our job to kind of present some simple solutions that countries can adopt. The good news is that in the European Union, they're making a lot of progress. There's now a requirement that comes into effect this year that multinational companies have to list the beneficial owner or the human who's ultimately behind them. The UK and the Netherlands are planning to do this publicly in what are called beneficial ownership registers. And both jurisdictions have historically had some pretty favorable secrecy laws for corporations. G20 leaders meeting in Australia a couple years ago committed to implementing these registries. We very much hope that as these registries come online around the world, that they are public. Because we found that certainly with something like the Panama Papers, crowdsourcing is your best tool, and that you really don't want to make it that only authorities are able to look at this information. And it's much more powerful when you have journalists and civil society and other interested parties being able to access this information, that's key. So we really hope these registries will be public, and we hope that they will start to cover the entire world so that those who seek to hide their funds can't just move to another country.
Back to you, Will Fitzgibbon, and back to the use of these types of tax havens. What do you think the percentage of people who are doing this, putting their money in these areas, places like Panama or others, what percentage do you think have legitimate business concerns, and what percentage do you think are doing it, in fact, to conceal unauthorized acquisition of money and assets?
I think it depends on what you consider legitimate business concerns. Obviously, a mining executive thinks it's perfectly acceptable if legally they can set up a company in the British Virgin Islands and reduce their tax rate from 35% to 2%. We see in the Panama Papers specific examples of businessmen and women and of individuals writing, for example, to Mossack Fonseca and saying, Barack Obama's about to be inaugurated, I need a Panamanian company so I can pay less tax because I know he's going to increase it. Decent people can disagree over whether or not that's legitimate. I think, more importantly, Panama Papers, although perhaps a small number of users of these shell companies, do year after year, in country after country, show that fraudsters, people still today on the run from authorities, have used these companies to buy property in New York City, to move money into Monaco or Swiss bank accounts. And even if they are small numbers, it's still an issue that could be resolved and that the world doesn't need to experience simply because some jurisdictions accept a level of anonymity.
The same question to you, Porter McConnell. What percentage of people do you think who are doing this have legitimate business concerns, and what percentage are doing this to conceal unauthorized money and assets?
One of the things we hear from maybe some of the corporate social responsibility leaders globally is that in the end, when you examine the reasons, there isn't a good reason for an anonymous company. We've heard this from cell phone magnate Mo Ibrahim, that really, when you search around for the reasons, and Will did a lovely story about husbands hiding assets from their wives in divorce cases and things like that, and pushing aside those personal dramas, what we have found is that transparency is what allows citizens to have this conversation with their governments and with their corporations. So it's up to each country to decide what they find acceptable and unacceptable. So for instance, when you talk about the distinction between tax avoidance and tax evasion, often the distinction is that people don't know about the activity and that when it is exposed to them through leaks like this, the laws change. And what was previously considered perfectly above board tax avoidance or tax planning or tax optimization or whatever euphemism you want to use becomes tax evasion, becomes a criminal offense, becomes illegal. And so I think for us, inserting a bit of transparency into the market is very helpful for allowing citizens to have these conversations. Because right now, quite frankly, they don't know what's happening. And the reason they don't know what's happening is because it's in multinational corporations and high net wealth individuals' interest to not share that information. You have to ask why.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Will Fitzgibbon. He's a reporter for the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. That's the organization that has spent over a year poring through the Mossack Fonseca documents and releasing them to the public. And Porter McConnell. She's director of the Financial Transparency Coalition, based here in Washington. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel, VOA, or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout-out to a loyal listener in Pakistan, Junaid Ikram. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on Facebook. Well, back to you, Will Fitzgibbon. You know, mentioning a listener from Pakistan leads me to ask you if you have noticed a pattern from certain countries more than others for these types of activities.
Well, I think the Pakistani Prime Minister is currently receiving a fair bit of flack for revelations relating to his family in Panama Papers. I would say that Mossack Fonseca is a Panama-based law firm, but this is a global issue. The very nature of offshore finance means it's not constrained by borders. An interesting question that many people have asked us at ICIJ is, where are the Americans? Why are there so few Americans? And I think that relates to what I just said. The offshore world is based in many more places than Panama and the BVI. As Porter said previously, the United States has its own secrecy jurisdictions. So in many ways, I can imagine it would be easier for a New York millionaire or anyone else who wanted to hide money within the states simply to stay at home.
Well, speaking of that, Porter McConnell, what about the so-called legal tax havens here in the United States? What kind of information does your organization have about them?
To be quite honest, while we have done a lot of research and a lot of triangulating to get to a better picture of activities happening, especially in the U.S., but also around the world, we don't know. There's a lot that we don't know. What I will say is that in general trends, it's about $1 trillion leaving developing country economies every year. What we have also found is that high-income countries such as the U.S. are receiving about 95 cents of every offshore dollar. And to take an example, sub-Saharan Africa, only about 0.5%. So if you're to think of the money, Will's absolutely right in the sense that the money flows in equal opportunity around the world, but there is something of a trend in that the U.S. and the U.K. and a number of other jurisdictions are receivers of more money than they lose in illicit flows. So many of them, I think, are feeling pressured to respond in the sense that there's a lot of money leaving developing countries. For instance, there was a report by the African Development Bank and group called Global Financial Integrity, who are members of the coalition, that suggested that over the last 30, 40 years, the continent of Africa is actually a net creditor to the rest of the world if you take into account these illicit financial flows. So the idea, the narrative that developing countries are somehow broke and can't afford roads and schools and hospitals, it's not actually the case that this money is being secreted off elsewhere.
I think that's a very important point. Back to you, Will Fitzgibbon, and let's use the word that describes this activity, which is corruption, that is the misuse of public funds for private ends. And this is most unfortunate that while they're not the only culprits, that many leaders in the developing world, in Africa in particular, are simply diverting public funds for private ends. And this type of activity, or rather the leak of these papers, is one way of exposing that. On this point, do you see any action that can result from this, whether it's pressure from civil society in a variety of developing countries, that will finally lead to putting an end to this kind of abuse of public funds, which should be used, as Porter said, for building schools, for building hospitals, for basically improving economic and social development?
I think what's been interesting in the reaction from Panama Papers is the difference in the reaction among many countries. For example, Russia today and a number of, say, North African nations, we've largely seen leaders shrugging their shoulders and saying either that Panama Papers is a conspiracy or that there's simply nothing worth reporting. I would, however, take comfort in some great reporting that's been done in Nigeria and civil society's overtly calling for resignations in some cases of political leaders. I mean, certainly what is clear in Panama Papers is that there are a large number of political figures who seem to, and in some cases explicitly, are asking Mossack Fonseca with help to move money, up to $40 million in one case. There's an email from a political figure relating to that kind of movement, let alone all of the ministers and politicians whose name appear on often very lucrative oil, mining and gas contracts. And they are the kind of documents and they're the kind of questions that civil society and also national authorities need to start investigating further and asking questions about.
Porter McConnell, do you see a move afoot to combat the corruption that we're seeing, this misuse of public funds for these types of personal gain? How do you see it?
There's a bit of a misconception out there about the source of illicit financial flows, and I think there's a good reason for it. Corruption actually generally is understood to account for only 3 to 5% of the total of illicit financial flows around the world. Next comes criminal enterprises at 30 to 35%, and then 60 to 65% corporate tax evasion and tax avoidance from multinationals. So, as I said, there's a good reason for that in the sense that it's the people's money. And so there's an outsized importance placed on corruption because it may be a smaller amount of money. And again, state budgets are smaller in some ways because the vast amount of these assets are held and maintained by corporations. So it's a downstream problem, you could argue. But I think people are understandably upset about stealing the public's money. That said, I have seen a lot of evidence around the world that developing country governments are starting to take steps to fix the problem themselves. Kenya used to be the number one easiest place to set up an anonymous shell company in the world. Now, the Kenyan Revenue Authority has been given new powers to investigate and to examine corporations that are avoiding taxes in the country. Ethiopia is addressing trade misinvoicing by creating a new customs database, and they're doing that in cooperation with India. India and Argentina are demanding information from Switzerland about the bank accounts opened by their citizens there. Whether they'll get it or not is another question. There's a lot of activity afoot in developing countries to try to address the problem.
Well, back to you, Will Fitzgibbon. In terms of other reactions from those who appear to be implicated, what are their reactions? Those in denial or basically criticizing the whole enterprise, but I mean, we know that the Prime Minister resigned and people are having different reactions.
Right. I think in parts of the world, public figures are certainly paying attention. The Prime Minister, after initially saying he wouldn't go, left shortly after publication of Panama Papers. David Cameron in the United Kingdom suffered what some media outlets called his worst week in office following revelations about his father and what many have agreed to be his pretty cack-handed attempt to respond to that initially. Other leaders of countries have either announced inquiries or investigations. I think Panama Papers has been amazing in terms of the global response from authorities and country leaders into it, from political inquiries to judicial inquiries, let alone the raids on Mossack Fonseca offices that we've seen in a number of Central and South American countries over the past few days.
Well, speaking of raids, just quickly, in terms of their reaction, I read somewhere where they were prepared to pursue organizations like yours and newspapers that have leaked these papers saying that you have used proprietary data and released this information and they're going to pursue you. What are the implications of that, or are they just talking?
We'll have to wait and see what ICIJ hears further from Mossack Fonseca. Obviously, we were in communication with them regularly before publication. I understand that the firm has asked Panamanian authorities to look into the source of the leak. But so far, my understanding is that journalists, and there were 400 of us working on Panama Papers across the globe, have so far been, I think, rather more interested in the positive public reaction to Panama Papers, both from an official and a public point of view. I've had friends come back from holidays over the past week who've said that even their taxi driver in Bolivia was talking about this. So it really is percolating.
Indeed. It would probably far outweigh and overshadow any legal action that they may try to take. Well, back to you, Porter McConnell, again, looking at the implications of this leak, the Panama Papers. Any more expectations that you have with respect to shedding more light over these types of tax shelters and what you think can be achieved in terms of more action, greater transparency?
There will be, in the course of the next year or two, a dozen to two dozen to something in that range of countries that start to implement registries of who's behind shell companies. So there are some early adopters, as I mentioned, the European Union and some G20 countries are starting to answer the call, and based on their commitment a couple of years ago, are starting to take national level action. What will be interesting to me is to make sure that those registries, where they're made public, get used by citizens. And I take that very much as a challenge to us as civil society, that we asked for this information, we better be prepared to sift through it in ways that are useful for a public debate about what laws should be on the books, about what financial dealings we consider acceptable as societies and what we don't. So it will be up to us to turn the interest and the news cycle into something a bit more durable.
And from your perspective, Will Fitzgibbon, I imagine that your organization has given great hope and encouraged many investigative journalists around the world as a result of your publications.
We've certainly received a very full inbox since publication of journalists wishing to access the data to join the project, and ICIJ is currently looking to expand coverage so that we have journalists in important countries like Tanzania or Ghana or Turkey join the project. So this is very much an ongoing database for investigative journalists so that important public interest stories can continue to be told.
And the last word to you, Porter McConnell, with respect to implications for your firm and going forward in bringing to light this type of activity and trying to gain more transparency.
I think we have a lot of work to do, and I think what we have found through the Panama Papers and other information that has been leaked to various sources, that those who seek to hide their money and the facilitators of those activities are very smart at moving and exploiting and looking for loopholes. And they have armies of lawyers and bankers and accountants whose job it is to do this. So we always have to be playing a game of catch up with them. And we have to know that they are always on the take. And so I think for us, it will be really important to keep up and to ensure that our laws keep up with the realities of a more globalized financial market than ever before.
Well, on that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. We're sure to have more analysis in the coming months about the fallout from the Panama Papers. I'd like to thank my guests, Will Fitzgibbon, he's reporter at the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, and Porter McConnell, director of the Financial Transparency Coalition. Thank you so much, both of you, for your terrific insights.
Happy to do it.
Thanks.
Encounter was produced here in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. And our engineer was Howie Smith. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.